on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome along to a 105 Sports special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. This week it's an International Men's Day special as we chat to some professional, semi-professional, amateur athletes, coaches and content creators from the local sports scene here in Cambridgeshire. That is because it's International Men's Day tomorrow, Thursday the 19th of November. Now, Cambridge Director of Rugby Richie Williams, former Cambridge University cricketer, now of Leicestershire County Cricket Club Rishi Patel, and Cambridge City forward Ryan Ingrie will be joining me for an open discussion about being a man in sport. You'll also have the chance to listen back to some of the best interviews we've had with men over the last few months. We'll be celebrating some fantastic achievements from local men in the community as Cambridge United youngster Leon Davies won the PFA Community Champion Award back in August. And we also find out how our local grassroots clubs are tackling the stigma of men's mental health with Melbourne Football Club captain Carlin Pipe and local football content creator Stu Baker. So thank you very much for tuning into today's show. My name is Ollie Slack. If you want to get in touch, you can do. Email us sport@cambridge105.co.uk. You can also get in touch on social media at 105sport on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram as well. So let's start then with that open table discussion. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Cambridge Director of Rugby Richie Williams, former Cambridge University cricketer Rishi Patel, who now plays for Leicestershire County Cricket Club, and Cambridge City striker Ryan Ingrie. All three join me now. Thanks very much for coming on the show, guys. Richie, let's start with you. Firstly, if you could just tell me, what do you think it's like being a man involved in sport in 2020, and then also more specifically in rugby as well?
I think, you know, we've got a responsibility now as males, particularly in the sporting field, to probably erode the thoughts around sort of toxic masculinity, you know, around a certain stereotype that is involved in sport. You know, and I do think that, again, we have a responsibility to probably change the perception of sportsmen and what we're about. I think, you know, the three of us on today are all in positions where we are role models, you know, and our behaviours and our players' behaviours are certainly under the microscope now more than ever. So, you know, I think it's all around education to start with, around, you know, what are good behaviours, you know, how we can have an impact on the younger generation coming through. And again, now you've referenced the prevalence of mental health and people's mental well-being, and, you know, these are all things that are really sort of significant now, considering everything that we're going through in this country with COVID-19. So, yeah, I think we do have a responsibility as a gender to promote a lot of good behaviours and model good practice.
And as a coach, as a director of rugby, do you feel that responsibility perhaps more, looking after a number of people?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I'd like to think now that the players that I work with directly and indirectly are all contribute to being sort of good role models. And again, I think it's some of the values that we live by at our club, you know, integrity and honesty are two really important ones. And probably something that is starting to emerge more than it has done in the past is, you know, admitting that, you know, you are vulnerable at times. We have a really strong support network, both internally at the club and, you know, with some of our external providers as well, for players and staff to sometimes hold their hand up and say, I'm not okay. And again, maybe going back 5 or 10 years, that would be seen as a weakness, whereas now I think it's I think that's slowly changing.
Rishi, as a young cricketer in a very competitive Essex side, and obviously now at Leicestershire as well, how have you found sort of, I guess, the challenges over the last year? What would you respond to that, being a man in 2020, your thoughts and feelings on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely tough, I think, especially coming from Essex, where, you know, we're sort of, I was always on the fringes of playing. It can be quite a lonely place in some respects, because, you know, you're always under the microscope, and you may only get one chance to play. And I think that can lead to quite a lot of pressure that you put on yourself to, you know, you have to perform for that one game if you want to keep playing, otherwise you can be out of the team, and sort of then you get forgotten about a little bit until someone else does that, does pretty well. So it can be quite tough, I think, because you always take your work home. And I think especially in sports, A lot of other jobs, you can sort of like leave your job at your desk as such. But with sports, you always take it home. You always think about that one mistake or, you know, those mistakes that are made, which can end up making you lose your job. So I think there's a lot of pressure on that in that regard.
Has it been particularly challenging for you over the last few months because you're getting settled into a new environment at Leicestershire?
Yeah, it's quite difficult. You know, I've relocated and I'm trying to mix in with a group of lads which I don't particularly know too well. And then we're sort of hit by lockdown and then we have to sort of isolate and you're by yourself and I'm living up here by myself. And, you know, that's quite a strange and quite an unusual experience for me because I've always been at home with Essex and, you know, my family's been around. So it's an adaptation which I think you have to get used to if you're going to be in sports.
Ryan, for yourself, football's often landed with a stigma of it of not being the best place to talk about mental health or generally the challenges it presents being a man. What are your thoughts on being in that dressing room environment in the football side of things?
I believe it's something that's got to change. We've got to become more open and honest with each other. I think it's slowly getting there. And like Richie said, it's more of a strength now of coming out and speaking about it. And I'm sure a lot more people are more open about it. But certainly, it's obviously this year has been a challenge. A lot of people get good health and by doing sport and playing sport and being in gyms. And like I say, with it stop starting at the moment, it's not good for it at all.
Yeah, have you found that particularly challenging, that stop-start nature? I guess for someone like yourself who's played for a few years now, yeah, I guess you're used to that routine, aren't you, of pretty much September to May playing football all throughout?
Yeah, and it's good to have a routine. It's nice to be training and in and around everybody. And like you say, it's a team sport and the morale's been good. And like you say, for it to stop and then start again, and it just, for people that do struggle and need to be around it, it's hard for them now that have got to self-isolate or are all working from home by themselves. It's just such unprecedented times that it is tough. It's tough for a lot of people.
And the dressing room, the dressing room is, I guess, that key place where the stigma is thrown around because of the banter, whether it goes too far, if it is an environment where people can open up. You said it's changed. Do you see that, I guess, more specifically at Cambridge City? Do you see it in an environment where, if, for example, there was a player who was feeling down or at a low point, they'd be able to open up and talk to their teammates?
Yeah, definitely. I think back in the day, probably not, but now I think there's a lot of people that understand it and want to help. And like you say, as long the banter can go a little bit too far, but as long as you know where the line is and you don't step over it, and we're all sort of a team and we all want to be in it together. So you've got to help out and be listening. And so also the coaches are a lot better now understanding it, and you can pull them to one side and you can have that conversation. If you're ever feeling down or you want to know, for example, you're training every week, every day or however it is, and you're not getting in the side, you can pull the manager to one side now and have that conversation. And especially with our manager and a lot of others that are younger, they do totally understand it. And it's definitely helpful as to know where you stand and what you need to do.
And Richie, let's talk about role models. Were there any particular role models growing up, male role models that you looked up to?
Yeah, probably going back to when I was in school, it was my PE teacher in secondary school because, again, probably because of his status within the school, because of the subject that he taught. But I think Ryan just made the point there was the relationship that he had with the students in the school and the rugby team. Again, it was built on trust. If there were problems, he was very approachable. And I'd like to think that some of those values and sort of traits are now apparent in, you know, what I'm trying to do when I'm coaching. But I do think that is really, really important, that if we are going to have this environment, which wants everybody to be honest, I think it's got to be a two-way thing from the players and the coaching and management staff as well.
Rishi, what about you with regards to role models?
You know, it's quite hard. Obviously, the main role models I had were what people being seen on TV, so Sachin Tendulkar was the one that I looked up to. And back then, you sort of never really heard much about mental health or anything regarding that sense. But now you're sort of seeing more and more players come out and sort of stand up and say, you know what, I'm not all right. And you see players. And I think the good thing about it is, especially with the England stuff, is that they're actually taking time out and saying, right, guys, you need to rest and recuperate and make sure you're in the right mental state to then carry on playing at that high level, because there is a lot of pressure and that takes a toll. That takes its toll on people's mental health.
And Ryan, for yourself?
Yeah, I think the good thing is, like Richie says, you have a coach or you have someone that you look up for too. And the good thing is they're always learning and you're learning as well. You're picking up coaching tips and things that I want to do better in the future, say. And I just think it's slowly filtering through, and we are becoming more open and honest, and we're understanding it better like we should do. And like I say, if we all carry on learning from each other, then it's only going to create a better atmosphere for everybody.
In regards to father figures, Rich, I imagine when you think of role models, generally people's dads are their main figures. Was your father someone who you looked up to, who taught you, I imagine, the ropes of rugby and showed you the path in life?
Yeah, pretty much, Ollie. Again, growing up in a sort of sporting environment, my dad played rugby to a reasonably good level, and probably some of my early memories were we're going to watch him play and local team on Saturday. So again, you pick up the values of, you know, of rugby, then the sport that obviously I'm involved in now. But yeah, you do pick up the good and bad things that you see, and then you slowly sort of shape your own philosophy and your own behaviours around that. But yeah, ultimately, my family have been big role models, you know, in what I'm doing in my career, and yeah, my father in particular.
And with no disrespect, you are the oldest person in this chat, so the easiest person to answer this question, I imagine. But have you seen your role perhaps both when you were younger and you had a family around you? Is that different to perhaps you now being the father of a family? Have you seen the roles change or things you have to do differently?
No, yeah, good question. I think, you know, being a dad and having two daughters, or one daughter, another daughter on the way, I think there's almost a different responsibility there that you want to be a good role model. You want to, you know, portray what males should behave like. I think there's a real sort of importance there. But I think that's probably gone into the work environment as well at the rugby club. You know, we don't just have a men's section. There's a girls team. There's young girls that are coming through the age group. So I do think that there is that element of responsibility from myself as director of rugby, but also the players as well, is to promote those good values and you know, show everything that's good about, you know, being a male.
And Rishi, for yourself, I said touched on father figure. Was your dad very much someone who you looked up to? And I imagine probably did thousands and thousands of throwdowns in the back garden.
Yeah, I had my dad and my granddad sort of living with me, and they sort of always helped me and guided me the way that I wanted to play cricket and to grow up. So it was a really nice family environment for myself to grow up in. And I think that was sort of key. And sort of making those tough decisions became a lot easier. And seeing sort of their hard work as well, you know, it's not just throwdowns, it's sort of travelling to and from games, driving us around to training, which would be like 8 o'clock, and getting back at 10 o'clock in the evening. It's all the other things that I think a lot of people don't see, the time and commitment and the money that goes into sort of raising a professional sportsman. And I think they all deserve a big, big round of applause and a lot of credit, because without them, we probably wouldn't be where we were today.
And Ryan, did you have a similar relationship with your parents as well?
Yeah, my dad actually coached me when I was younger. He was my manager. So in terms of role models, it was obviously he was there and he was telling me a few things. Sometimes I probably did get on his nerves a little bit. but yeah, he like just said there, that they travelled up and down the country with me, driving me everywhere to my games. And yeah, a lot of where I am now, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my parents, and not just my dad, my mum as well. So yeah, as role models, I look up to him, and even now he still comes and watches and he gives me tips on how to play, and he's not too critical on me. But like you say, and he's another one I can speak, the car journeys, I used to speak to him about anything and everything. And now I'm at the age I am, I understand how important that is as well, not just about sport and him teaching me that, about anything else, how my school life is or how work's going or anything like that. It is all good for this conversation. It's all good for mental health. So, as in terms of sort of a role model, he's been brilliant, I must say.
It's interesting your dad coached you, because my dad was the same. When I was going up to play Colts football, my dad was the manager. And there was almost two different relationships you had. It was the one when you got home and you were to analyse and dissect the game to the hilt, but also when you then were actually with your teammates, it was a slightly different... It was just I stopped calling him dad and referred to him as his first name, which was slightly strange, but it's slightly odd having two different relationships. Was that the same with you?
Yeah, definitely. It was at football, like I say, I used to push his buttons a little bit. I used to be with my mates. So I used to sort of see what I could get away with. But certainly when I got home, it was back to being dad, and I was probably put back in my place a little bit.
and Rich, with regards to that team environment, all three of you involved in team sports, pretty much throughout a season you'd see teammates would see each other at their lowest, at their highest, etc. You know, you go to trenches with your teammates in some scenarios, especially the physical contest that rugby is as well. You therefore assume that team environment is somewhere where a bloke would feel they could really talk, they could really have that relationship with their peers, because, like I say, they see each other at their highest and their lowest.
Yeah, and again, I think it's you're absolutely right to reference that. I think it's a challenge as well, because you know you've got 30 blokes that are all competing to play in the starting 15 on any given Saturday, and you know you're not always going to have happy conversations with players that, you know, that have made that team. So I think there is a challenge around managing a group. And again, going back to what both the guys have said, it's about having those good connections, those really strong relationships with your players. And again, spotting any sort of warning signs. And I'd like to think that the level of support that we've now put in place at Cambridge, with a couple of our current players getting mental health first aid qualifications and some external companies that are supporting that really important area, I'd like to think that, you know, the players are more comfortable now talking to each other. I think previously it would have been seen as a sign of weakness if a player said that I'm not feeling great, I've had a really bad day at work, my family life is not great. I think players now are more comfortable having those conversations. We're still a long way off that complete openness and complete transparency, but I do think there has been a shift over the past sort of 12 months around those things.
And Richie touches there on potentially seeing or viewing other people as weak in a sense, especially when cricket is such a mental battle the majority of the time. It's often talked about how much, especially in your case, in batting as well, you could spend ages deliberating over your technique or whatever. It's so just constantly churning out information or technique in your head. Would there be a fear that perhaps if you did admit you were feeling low or down or whatever, that you would be perceived as weak because cricket is such a mental game, a mental battle half the time?
I think that the perceptions are changing, but there definitely was a perception of, you know, if you are mentally fatigued, shall we say, then there'd be a perception of being weak. But I think now it's sort of changing. There was obviously this season, Gary Bellon was obviously struggling with his mental health, and he sort of had to take time out of the game to sort of really refocus and obviously decide what he wanted to do. And there are stories about that. I think, like I said before, it can be quite lonely playing cricket as well, because it's all on stats essentially. So however good you feel, however bad you feel, it's all numbers based really, and that can be quite difficult to accept at times. So it can be quite hard, but it is changing, which is good.
And Ryan, just lastly then, as we wrap this up, so we spoke at length about the potential stigmas or areas that are changing. What do you feel the biggest challenge is for a man in sport in 2020, and how do you see that potentially easing?
The challenges are all to see. It's, like you say, they're all competitive sports. We all want to be the very best we can be. all of them are team sports, so everyone is pushing each other, everyone's wanting to play in that team. So in terms of challenges, it's sort of challenging yourself, but you've got to challenge other people, and you've got to want to be better than them. Like you say, this year's been hard. It's been hard for a lot of people. It's how you overcome it in lockdown, say. It's, are you going to stay on top of your fitness, for myself anyway, or other people in other sports? Are you going to go out running? Are you going to go that extra mile to give you your best chance of playing every week and performing at your best? So, yeah, there's a lot of challenges. And like you say, with what's happened, with COVID, it's how you mentally deal with it. And if you are struggling, like Richie said, coaches do see signs of it in training, and you've got to be honest and speak to people. And the best way of overcoming anything, I've certainly found, since I know I'm not really old yet, but it is speaking to people. It is having that conversation and opening up about anything and everything. So and everything, there's challenges in work life, there's challenges at sport, and it's how you deal with them, how you come out the other side. And if we can all do that, then, and all help each other to do that, then it's going to be a better place for everyone.
Rishi, Richie, Ryan, thank you very much for joining me. Really appreciate it. It's been great to chat, great to get your insight, and stay safe during lockdown as well.
Yeah, great. Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you.
What a fantastic insight that was into three different sportsmen's lives at all different levels as well. We had a professional in Rishi Patel, who plays cricket for Leicestershire County Cricket Club. We had, of course, the director of rugby side of things from a coaches and a manager of people in Richie Williams at Cambridge, and, of course, a man who's in the cut and thrust action in the local leagues in Cambridgeshire, in Ryan Ingray at Cambridge City. A real fascinating chat that was. If you missed any of it, if you want to listen back to it again, tell a friend, all of the above, you can do so. Head over to the Cambridge 105 Radio website after we're done here at 7 o'clock, and you can find this show back on a podcast. Just head to the catch-up section. Cambridge 105
Radio. Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Welcome back to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio, the International Men's Day special of the special, if that makes sense. Of course, it's International Men's Day tomorrow. That's Thursday, the 19th of November. Now let's celebrate, I guess, some of the best achievements from local men in their county. And back in the summer, in August, it was announced that Cambridge United youngster Leon Davies won the PFA Community Champion Award for all of his fantastic work in the community throughout the 2019-20 season with the U's. At the time, the club were also continuing their fantastic work to be known as a mentally healthy football club, which was recognised in an article in the national newspaper The Telegraph, which Leon also featured in. I had a discussion about his own battles with mental health during this conversation too, a few months ago. Now, let's talk about the latest news of yourself winning the PFA Community Champion Award. I should say congratulations as well. Normally, footballers sort of win awards for their work on the pitch, but nice to win something for your hard work and dedication off it.
Yeah, I think the work that footballers put on off the pitch is almost just as important on the pitch, because there's so much more to football than just actually playing the game. I think the community side is a massive, massive thing for any club, making sure that you are always contributing to fans, because at the end of the day, they're always paying to come watch us play. And young kids, whether that's kids not interested in football at all, whether they need to learn about mental health, which is something I'm always open to do, whether that's young lads who are in the academy, they can always relate to me because I was in their shoes one day as well. So it's honestly just from the bottom of my heart, especially just trying to help out as much as possible, especially during the thick bit of coronavirus. That was the most important time to really help out. It's something that I find really important at a football club.
Yeah, you've certainly done amazing work over, well, the last couple of years, and of course through the COVID pandemic as well. Works with the Cambridge United Community Trust, the Premier League Kicks campaign, obviously the usual sort of time that you spend with hospitals at Christmas time as well. And of course, some of the things you've been throughout the COVID pandemic, ringing people who have been slightly lonely as well. Give us an insight into some of that work that the Trust do, Leon, and how it does really help those people.
I think back to the phone calls that I was making with a few other players, with a list of numbers of season ticket holders, and it was just great, especially to speak to fans, just to get their insight of how they're doing at the start of coronavirus. And I think it maybe I could almost tell that they were that they liked the fact that a player was calling, that cause they just didn't expect it. They would have just been sat at home, just like the rest of us, all bored out of our brains, and then, you know, a Cambridge United player will call them and offer support. So that especially for me was something that was really well put on by Cambridge United and the trust, and stuff like the Premier League kicks and the mental health campaigns and stuff like that. It's all just really well put out by Cambridge United and well executed, and it's something that I hope can carry on for many years to come.
Yeah, before you sort of got involved with the community stuff, did you realise the impact a football club can have on the local community and its people?
I think so, yeah, definitely. Because when I first moved to Cambridge, obviously I was really into football, and my mate used to take me when I was about seven or eight years old. And I could tell even back then that football was a massive part of Cambridge. And it was something that I always think about now. When I was young in the NRE, getting thrown around, just enjoying myself. And it's something that you make sure, for me personally as a player, that I can give back, having known how important it is to the fans, having been a long fan for a long time.
I was going to say, you grew up in Milton and obviously being a local lad as well. How do you think it's changed over the years, the club and the community? From what you're saying, it seems as though that it's always been there, but I guess over recent times, we've obviously with the social media and the publicity it's got, it appears that the club has really established itself in the community.
I think so, yeah. I think every season I'm seeing more and more effort being put into the community as well. There's loads of, say, community dinners or different events that are put on. And every time, usually at the start of the season, us players might get shown a video on how important the community is to Cambridge United. So it's always implementing that knowledge into maybe new faces that don't really know what it's about for Cambridge as a club, so and as a city. So I think it's something that's really well done.
I want to move on to something else now. A recent article in The Telegraph, in fact, Leon, I'm sure obviously you'll be very aware of, and a number of fans will certainly be aware of as well, around mental health and Cambridge United being the first mentally healthy football club. One of the things you spoke about in the article was that often players put on a mask and sort of really hide their feelings. Do you reckon that's a reflection of potentially just football and I guess the stereotypical sort of macho man environment that the dressing room is, or do you reckon that's just society as a whole and that's why it comes across and bleeds into football?
I think that players put on a mask because, well, for me, I'll speak about me personally. If I come in one day and I'm not feeling great and I'll put on a mask, it's because I don't want to be portrayed as weak. Was my input. And especially when I was younger and there was a lot of senior players that had been through a lot and there was senior managers, I thought that I really need to be, my body language, my persona needs to be really strong and really energetic, just so that they don't look at and say, oh, Leon's not looking great today. You want to make sure that their first impression of you, whether that's every day, whether that's their actual first impression, is a good one. But there are times, especially where speaking out is important. You can put on a mask during the day, as long as you are able to find someone, whether that's just quietly in a room or when you get home to your wife or your girlfriend or your family, to then speak about what is actually getting you down.
Hmm. Do you reckon that's sort of people putting on a mask around the football environment? Do you reckon that is more than a football issue? That's a reflection on how we are in society, and that goes on in all industries across the country.
I think so. Yeah, I think people sometimes don't maybe feel confident enough to go out and speak about what's really on the forefront of their mind. So some people find it easier just to put on a mask and pretend like nothing's happening. And sometimes that will work for some people, but for some people it really won't, and it will fester on their minds, and then they won't speak to anyone, and it will just build and build and build, and then to the point where your head feels like it's about to explode, because there's things that you need to just get off your mind. whereas some people are completely different. Some people maybe need an arm around them and constant support. But I think the most important thing is, however any person feels that they need to deal with things, just find the best way to do it and the way that suits you most. Don't try and copy someone else if it doesn't suit you. That's what I think.
And I think you mentioned as well in the article, one of the struggles you had when you were younger was that that fear of making mistakes, or that sort of fear afterwards, and keeping it in your head. Because like you said, you weren't sure how you were being portrayed. How are you finding that now you're sort of slightly older and in the first team as well? Obviously, I imagine as well in the first team, you're pretty much under the spotlight. Like we said at the top of the interview, really, it's just the nature of the industry in football that there's almost pressure on you every game.
Yeah, especially when I was, say, 17, 18, coming into the first team, I remember if I'd make a mistake and maybe I'd hear fans getting onto me from either end, players getting onto you, that was something that I found really hard and I thought that was never going to go away. I thought this is just going to be tough for the rest of my life. And now that I've gotten a bit older and I've seen a lot more, I've learned how to say and make a mistake, just park that away. Because you don't have enough time on a football pitch to dwell on your mistakes, because you can make a mistake and then 2 seconds later someone else could be coming at you and you're there potentially making another one because you're still dwelling on the last one. So it all comes down to learning, really. And sometimes things you'll learn automatically, or sometimes you have to go out of your way to learn how to deal with things like that. I was a bit of both in that, I think. It comes with different matches on different occasions and also reaching out to different players and managers.
And now there's younger players in the side who are in your position that you were in a few years ago. What's your relationship like with them, the likes of Lewis Simper, Tom Dickens, as such, those players who potentially haven't had the first team experience that you've had now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always available if they ever had a question about when I was, say, Lewis Simper and Tom Dickens' age, how to deal with certain situations, because I think, especially for Lewis and Tom, it is their first full season as a professional. And I can always remember what my time was like and the struggles and the highs and lows. So it's making sure that them two players especially aren't feeling like they're on their own. That if they make a mistake or they're having a bad run of form, that they don't feel like they can reach out to anyone to come out of that. Because it will always have a drastic effect, I think, on your mental state if you're, say, going through a bad run of form, whether that's training or games, and maybe people are getting onto you a lot and you feel like you can't speak to anyone about it. That's when I think the loneliness will really kick in.
It's funny, I guess, because it's weird. There's almost two separate issues in that obviously it's the mental state and making sure you're mentally healthy as well, which is obviously the most important thing. But there's also almost a sporting aspect in that, potentially affecting performances as well, as bad as that sounds, because I've said the most important thing is the mental health. You're in an industry where, like you said, you get judged on your performances. I say almost times where you get nervous before a game when you have to just try and forget about it because you can't let it affect your performances.
I think so, yeah. Every game, I think now, is all a different game. If, say, you've had a bad game the week before and you're back in the next weekend, you can't still be thinking about that game. I think, you have a bad game Saturday, come Monday, you need to be ready to put it right on that training pitch, whether that's as simple as a passing drill or shooting drill, or even in the gym, even if you feel like you're getting that 100% out of yourself. And I think, especially with the nerves before a game, I think a lot of players will strive on the nerves and the atmosphere especially. I look back to Plymouth away this year was the most fans I'd played in front of. I think it was 11,500. I'd never experienced double figures, over 10,000 fans in a stadium. And I thought I was going to be quite nervous, but I was really excited. I was really excited. I just loved it. And ever since then, and even before that, you just look out and you just remember how lucky you are to be on that pitch, and remember that you were once in the stands watching, and now you're able to walk out as a Cambridge United player and actually play. It's something that it just excites you, and you just want to go out and do the best you can.
And Leon, lastly, because of the way the market's gone, the transfer market's gone because of the pandemic and the number of opportunities being given at Cambridge United, there's so many more youngsters in the side. And the majority, I imagine, they would have come up with yourselves through the youth system. So in essence, how nice is it the fact that you're just playing football after all this time with your mates?
Definitely, especially because I've been playing with especially some of them boys since I was about 10 years old. For us to have come all the way through and are now playing together on a first team stage, it's just something that I find really, really, really good. Because some different clubs, maybe you'll get one or two out of maybe a few age groups around that certain person who don't make it, and then they'll end up playing, I don't know, non-league and never seeing them again. Whereas we have a good core group of us young boys who have played together for a long time. We know each other's strengths. We know each other's weaknesses. We know when we need to put our arm around each other. And at the end of the day, like you said, you are playing with your mates. And it's just something that it's great. It's great, really.
Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Yep, you're listening to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. It's the International Men's Day Special. Up next here on Cambridge 105 Radio, after me, after we're done here at 7 o'clock, is the New Music Generator with Tim Willett. Now, men's mental health is something which is a lot more prevalent nowadays. And what are our local football grassroots clubs doing about it? Well, I caught up with Melbourne Football Club captain Carlin Pipe and firstly local content creator Stu Baker on World Suicide Prevention Day earlier this year to find out.
Well, I think, as you say, it has been taboo amongst men for a long time. And while we have started talking about mental health in the last couple of years, which is immensely positive, the conversation is now evolving because it's kind of the numbers of suicide are so alarming and lockdown hasn't helped that. And it's 12 men every day. You have to keep saying that because it is crazy. And the conversation, it is brilliant to keep asking men, are you okay? How are you doing? But the conversation is now evolving to, you know, are you feeling like you're going to take your own life? Because the numbers are crazy. And football is one of the biggest routes, you know, for men to talk and to be together. And as footballers, and Carlin will know, like, if a footballer does his ACL or something in the group chat, we'll be like, oh my God, nah, how can we help you? If someone's family member has cancer, we know all the questions to ask. You know, these kind of things, physical illness is something we're all acutely aware of. If you hurt your leg, it's rest, ice, compression, elevation. You know, we all know these things. In terms of mental health, all we're being told is talk, time to talk. Well, what do we talk about? What are conversations we should be having? You know, and this is why in days like this, while we should be having it every day, the chance to shine a spotlight for one day and to make the world see it. And if, you know, one or two people, you know, pick that up and go with it, then it's worth it. But suicide in particular, because the numbers are rising, and yeah, it's the conversation has to evolve now to save lives.
Yeah, I guess the key thing is making sure that people like us, I guess all of us in this chat here, make sure we talk about it more than just once a year. But it's also important that we recognise a specific day for it to get those people potentially who aren't talking about it more aware of the situation. You mentioned numbers, Stu. Let's go through a few of the statistics. These released last Tuesday, in fact, so very recent from the Office of National Statistics. Around three quarters of registered deaths in 2019 were among men from suicide, which follows a consistent trend back to the mid-1990s. The England and Wales male suicide rate of 16.9 deaths per 100,000 is the highest since 2000, and again remains in line with that rate in 2018. It's specifically 45 to 49 year old males as well, which is the highest age specific suicide rate. These are pretty shocking statistics, aren't they, Stu?
Yeah, it's horrendous. And these are, you know, it amazes me. Not only do everyone say, oh, you know, you do really well and talk about mental health and stuff, but everyone actually says, no, I knew someone. I knew someone who suffered, or it's a cause close to my heart. And while everyone will say that to me, and, you know, I would never try and get anyone to talk if they didn't want to, it is amazing the amount of people that have been affected. And it's so important to try and, because it's not easy, but to try and get into a mindset. And I think when suicide and mental health is concerned, people think it's like this, oh, we need to get you in a room, need to sit you down, need to have a cup of tea and a bit of cake and say, are you okay? And do some therapy. That's not true. You can have a chat in a car on a Saturday. that would take 30 seconds. You can have a chat in a pub buying a round. You can have a chat, or, you know, on the way, walking somewhere. You can have a chat with your old man at the table. This chat can take 20 or 30 seconds. It's not like it used to be, you know, and these conversations don't have to be anything particularly in depth. They can just be, let's, you know, how are you? No, are you okay? You know, are you having these thoughts? And then you can build on that from there, you know, but we have to have these conversations.
Yeah, we certainly do. And like you say, chatting is certainly the best way to try and deal with it. And of course, there are conversations you can have with the Samaritans. They're day and night as well, 365 days a year. We certainly make that clear. You can call them for free on 116-123. That's 116-123. Or email them at joe@samaritans.org or visit their website, samaritans.org, as well. Carlin, for you, of course, Melbourne have done a lot with CPSL Mind over the last couple of years, which is Cambridgeshire, Peterborough and South Lincolnshire. I think it was the club's charity of the year for the last couple of years, in fact, where 25% of all fundraising has gone to that. How important is it, I guess, as a football club to raise awareness, to reach out to the community that you touch?
I think, you know, not just as a football club, but in general, but obviously, you know, we're discussing the football club aspects now. I think, as you guys have already touched on really and alluded to, it's really just about kind of getting exposure, as much exposure as we can. You know, the more exposure we get, the more we're discussing these things and the more minds we're getting kind of discussing these same topics. We will hopefully eventually get strategies that come out of those to know, help people move forward that, you know, suffer with these type of problems. And, you know, having a football team as an outlet, you know, obviously mental health affects everyone, but the stats are alarming, you know, for the gentlemen, you know, from these young men that are taking, well, the young men that are dying, 75% of these are suicide. And it obviously highlights there's an issue there. Raising the awareness is starting to broach, you know, that kind of that soup where we're all talking and getting a dialogue moving in the right direction. And the football club, I guess, is that kind of conduit to the next step where we've got these channels to discuss, and now we're moving into some things that we can, you know, from an action perspective, getting people involved around the community, having an open forum in the, you know, in the changing room. I mean, it can be a bit of a macho environment at times, but, you know, we all give each other a little bit of a ribbon, a little bit of a roast, then we have a laugh, and, you know, usually that rubs off well. But yeah, you know, the more that we raise these, I think it just gives people a safe space, or, you know, the idea that there is a safe space to air concerns. If, you know, if we have a wobble, and with the stats, we know, I mean, there's three of us on this conversation now. The stats tell us that technically one in three of us, or even one in two of us, or two out of the three of us will be affected. So yeah, the more we've got that dialogue out there and that safe space, I think it just allows the beginnings, you know, the fostering of an environment to get people talking and moving in the right direction.
Yeah, and how at Melbourne have you perhaps gone about trying to create that safe space? Because obviously, of course, in a football environment, and I guess in any environment, in a workplace, there's always going to be banter, there's always going to be people having a laugh, but it's making sure that, I guess, if anyone ever feels potentially out of place or not well, then they do have someone to turn to or do have a place to go.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, in a big group environment like that, you've always got a few people that are quite perceptive and can usually pick up on whether people are responding well to the ribbon and things like that, or if they are someone that needs a bit more of a gentle hand. But in terms of what we've been doing, you know, there's loads of stuff, club fundraisers. We've done loads of stuff within the club, raffles, dog racing, getting all the lads together and out on nights, you know, big groups, a couple of gin nights. So a couple of them are, you know, revolving mostly around the booze, but there's been other things as well. We did an amazing Mind Awareness Day, which really dragged in a lot of the guys in the community. I mean, loads of people to go through, but the Black Horse, the Dolphin, the Barbers, the Butchers in the Town, Leech's Butchers, Unlimited Logos. Everyone really came in, and we managed to get a day together where we did, you know, a breakfast, kind of sit down with everyone. And then, yeah, basically getting everyone around in the community, just kind of sat in the same room, you know, and just, what's the word I'm looking for? Just communicating, really, you know, between not just the football team, but also the locals, you know, getting the locals involved with us and, you know, just kind of breeding a bit of a community thing there. And hopefully, you know, what we do from the football club permeates outwards, and the same in the reverse, you know?
Yeah, certainly hope so. And I think I touched on at the top of the interview, there's obviously been a bit of a stigma, or years gone by, there certainly has with football and the changing environment. Being in that environment still at a grassroots level, is that there? Is it gone? Is it on its way of going out? How do you see it?
You'd be talking in terms of like the banter and sometimes going in.
Yeah, just regards to potentially people maybe not feeling like the football environment is a place they can open up, they can talk, whether it be a changing room or a club.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's partly, as the club captain and the kind of pusher of this charity for the club, you know, I think that's partly my responsibility and the responsibility of the people that are above me, but also, you know, in terms of the club aspects, but also the teammates below me, you know, below me, you know, we should all be on the same page with that and keeping a good eye out. You know, it's all well and good having a bit of a laugh and a bit of a, you know, a bit of banter, but there is always a line. And as long as you can kind of recognise that line, and the only way you're going to do that is by broaching communication, you know, you find a good line between people. And, you know, for some people, it may not be banter. Do you know what I mean? They may not be too keen on that side of things, but you pick up on that after a while. And, you know, there is a line to be drawn. There's good fun and then there's going a bit too far. But I'd like to think at Melbourne, we've got a good balance. You know, we've got a team of top lads, even more this year. So hopefully in terms of that, you know, we can keep fostering that environment where people can talk and hopefully feel that they can talk. And yeah, I think, you know, as long as we can keep doing these things, keep promoting the awareness, then we're at least taking steps in the right direction.
And Stu, do you feel football clubs, especially at a grassroots level, because the impact they have on the community, villages and towns across the whole country, do you feel they have a real chance and opportunity to raise awareness of mental health?
Yeah, I think it's one of the places in society where, you know, still in 2020, men collectively get together. Men who don't necessarily socialise together outside of football, it's a collective environment. There's not many, maybe, potentially, you know, sports clubs, musical clubs and whatever. And I think because football has always represented a release, you know, originally it was the factory, you come out of a factory and you go and play football. I mean, it's always been that collective thing for men. And I think as men's, you know, the needs of men and the role of men and the expectations on men have changed, that's opened up a can of worms, if you want to say it. But yeah, I mean, they've always had a place in society, right from the very beginning. You know, you only need to look at the words or the backgrounds of teams. You know, Sheffield Wednesday was a cricket club and Liverpool was a working men's club, and where all these clubs originally came from, they've always been groups of men. And up until 20 years ago, probably groups of men didn't have those conversations. But it's noticeable to think that mental health has kind of always been there. It's been there through world wars and, you know, men coming back. It's been there through, you know, different things that have happened socially and economically and financially. And it's only really now we're waking up to the fact that all the effect it's having on men. And I don't know about Carlin when he says in the community, but it's not just young men who get these things. It's the whole spectrum from young teenagers to, you know, men who have never really had the chance to talk about it before. And I think it's really interesting. Yeah, so they are central, really. I think just on the point before, it was really interesting you were saying about banter and things. What I have noticed being involved in Cottenham is it's less kind of, it's always banter, but it's less like stuff that kind of makes you wince among like younger men. It kind of seems that they're producing like a younger, a better kind of person, a more well-rounded person. And sometimes it's difficult because you want to shout at them just because of the football or whatever. And yeah, they don't respond as well to that. It's a lot of arm around the shoulder. And it's really nice to see, actually, because maybe it's a different world that they've grown up in. So I don't think this association with the make you, you know, banter you so hard until you're a man kind of thing, I think that's actually with the boys who are stepping up to our first team, that's not even there. So that is organically going anyway.
And I guess if these conversations and the things we're talking about can be aligned from a football club like Melbourne, who are doing such a good job, to then those kids going through, or the youngsters going through at a young age, and if they're getting that exposure, then that's only going to be more beneficial further down the line.
100%. I mean, it's massively important that, as Colin said, you involve everybody. And I think the words like sensitive and emotional and stuff like that, and banter, people see these as two ends of the spectrum. People see that you can either be a man who puts in tackles, who shouts at his players, who does all of this, or you can be softly spoken, you can be emotional, you can be sensitive, you can be the quiet one in the dressing room. But that's not the case at all. You need a mixture of everyone, and everyone can be that. You just need to put the right tools in place for men to be able to talk. And as I said before, talking these days doesn't represent being on a chair and having a therapist listen to you. Talking could be literally in any environment between any two men, men who know each other, men who don't know each other, men who just want to check in on each other, men who want to have a deeper conversation with each other. And those conversations and what we do talk about, particularly with suicide prevention, but we need to kind of start reclaiming that word as well, because the stats are so high.
And lastly, I guess from both of you, of course, like I said at the top of the show, Thursday is World Suicide Prevention Day. How, if people are listening, and I guess ourselves, can we go about trying to raise as much awareness as possible on the day?
So, again, I think, you know, if you are experiencing a wobble, I mean, we've all, I'd assume everyone in this platform has had it. If you're having a wobble, just go and speak to someone. Doesn't matter who, doesn't matter how. Just, you know, raise it with someone. So at least someone can be kind of having a little bit of an eye. And just to see, you know, if they can help you move in the right direction. You know, there's no one size fits all, but you've got to start. You've got to take that first step.
Yeah, I'd say be ready to talk about your own kind of difficulties. Be ready to listen to others and to understand that it is your own journey. Every step is a step in, even the smallest step is a step in the right direction. Even if, you know, if you want to start to talk, that doesn't mean you have to start this whole process of getting better and going to services and everything. Talking is the very first step on the journey. So even talking is huge, which quite often for a lot of us, it's people directly in your circle that it's the hardest to talk to. So people maybe on the outside of your circle or on the edge of your circle would be the easiest to talk to. So if you can identify somebody like that, or if you want to talk to an actual service, or if you just want to get involved before you start talking about your own issues, you know, there's plenty of stuff out there. It doesn't have to be rudimentary, sit down and have a conversation and say, well, I've seen this and I'm feeling like this and I have to talk about this. Just do it in your own way, but be ready to do it, and be ready to do it for yourself, and be ready to do it for others.
Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio.